The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today is at a place that I think a lot of people strive to eventually get to. He's been able to retire from his job, and today he supports himself off his rental income. But he didn't start there. He started like a lot of people. He had a full-time job. He was working a ton of hours. And to be totally honest, I don't know if he really had the time to buy the rental properties back when he did, but he made the time. He self-managed his properties for a long time, and today he's reaping the benefits of it. He's been able to retire from his job and live off the rental income. Now, I want to give you one quick warning before we get into today's episode. My guest, his full-time job was a doctor, and doctors obviously make a lot of money. But I think my guest would have gotten to where he is today, whether he was a doctor or whether he was a janitor. I think the principles in this show apply to anybody, no matter what your income level is. So whether you make $30,000 a year or $3 million a year, I think that anybody can do what my guest today has done. So let's get into his story. First, let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Corey Fawcett from Oregon.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to NaradaRealEstate.com. That's NaradaRealEstate.com.
But okay. Once I started getting a big salary, 3 years later, I was $500,000 in debt. And so that question became relevant. Do you pay off debt? Do you make investments? We decided to become debt-free. And since we were still only living on half of our income, we channeled a big portion towards investing and a big portion towards getting out of debt. 6 years later, we became debt-free. We paid the $500,000 off in less than 6 years.
Now, how did you get into $500,000 in debt?
Well, I bought a practice.
Okay.
I bought a motorhome. I bought a land to build my future dream home on.
Okay.
You know, I just started buying the things that people buy. I mean, when you're a successful doctor, you're supposed to have this stuff, right?
Sure.
So I just got going in that and I began to buy those things. And suddenly I look back and now I'm $500,000 in debt.
So now to get out of it, so I guess when you were in the $500,000 in debt, did you have the idea that you wanted to buy rental properties, or did that come after the debt was paid off?
I always knew I was going to do this. My grandmother, I had seen her growing up with rental properties, and as a teenager, I was her fix-it man. I helped her, so I kind of learned how to take care of these places. So I always knew I was going to do it, but I didn't really know when it was going to happen. And the way it came about was in 2001, when we were about to make our final payments and we were going to become debt-free in 2001, we began to think, well, what are we going to do with all this money? Mm-hmm. Because we snowballed our debt. And so now we're making this big debt payment every month to finally end this. And when the debt ends, we're going to have all this leftover money. And our decision was that we would use that money to invest in real estate.
Okay.
And that's how we got started.
Now, living on half of the salary. So you said you had your salary, your wife's salary, and you decided you were going to live on half of that money. Did that feel like a really big sacrifice at the time, or was that covering your basic expenses?
It was no sacrifice at all.
Okay.
because we got married only a few months into my internship. So I just finished medical school where I was living on less than nothing. You know, in medical school, you borrow money to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I was living on less than nothing then. And so when I became a resident, I started getting paid. So for the first time, I'm now making money. And so there was nothing to cut back from. We actually increased our lifestyle up to 50% of that income.
Okay.
It wasn't like we had to make cut back. It's way easier to move up to only half than
right.
it is to back up to half.
Because right.
once you make commitments, you got a house payment, you got a car payment, you're going on vacations. You know, once you make those commitments, it's hard to go backwards.
Yep.
So we were still advancing, and we decided not to advance all the way to a top of our income. And
which,
so it was easy to do it that way.
You know, it's interesting that you say it was easy to live on half, because I feel like for a lot of people, it's easy to live on whatever you're making. So like
more.
Right. Exactly. So you guys made that decision. Okay. We're going to save half of our money. Did you save up then for a down payment on your first property?
We were saving up for our down payment on our home.
Okay.
We were renting at the time, and we knew that we would be buying a home when we got done with our residency. We moved someplace else, and you know, we're going to need to buy a home. So we were doing two things. We were paying off my $18,000 of student debt. We were putting money in each of our IRAs, and we were putting money in my residency programs. I think it's called a 503B. You know, it was their nonprofit equivalent of a 401K.
Mm-hmm.
And we were putting money that still didn't take care of all the other half that was left over. And then, so we just, you know, we're saving it up. We saved enough money doing that during residency that if those accounts during those 5 years were just left alone until I'm age 70, they will be worth over $1 million.
Okay. Yeah.
So starting early with small amounts makes a huge difference.
Right.
On the other end.
Now, when you started to invest, I assume you're investing for cash flow today. Like,
yeah, I actually don't buy any more property anymore.
Okay. But the properties that you have, like you yeah. bought them with the purpose of generating cash flow.
Yes.
Okay. Was that something that you had learned from your grandmother, that you saw like how your grandparents were buying properties and that was supporting them? Is that kind of where you got the idea that you wanted to invest for cash flow versus appreciation?
Yes. You can't spend appreciation.
Right.
It's just a piece of paper that says you got money somewhere. But you can spend the cash flow and it doesn't touch your future. It's like the goose and the golden egg. You know, the goose is your appreciation and the golden egg is what you can spend, your cash flow. You don't want to hurt the goose. You just keep spending the cash flow.
Right.
And what we did, since I was a full-time surgeon, is we would buy our properties with no money down and cash back at closing, and then put money into them over time from our leftover money. And any money that the property made while I was a surgeon, we didn't need that money. So that money went back into paying down its debts. So the money just kept recycling. And so that eventually when I stopped practicing as a surgeon, then the cash flow would be available for us to use if we wanted to. But up until that point, all of the cash flow just went back into the property to pay down debts so that the future cash flow would be higher when we were ready to use it.
Did you have a property manager when you were starting out, or were you managing the properties yourself?
I managed the properties myself. I was a full-time surgeon and a property manager for 64 units, which was a pretty easy deal when you learn how to do it properly.
So you didn't feel overwhelmed? That's a lot of units. And I imagine as a surgeon, you're pretty busy and you don't have a lot of flexibility. Was that hard to do, to manage it yourself while you were working full time?
No, it was really easy.
Really? Okay. So like, how did you do it?
You have to automate things. You know, I hear a lot of doctors, I speak to doctors, and I hear a lot of them say this to me. I'm not going to take care of that rental stuff because I don't want to fix a toilet at 2 a.m. on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And they say, you know, I don't want to be doing that stuff. Well, then I ask them, okay, you got an office, don't you? Yeah. Well, do you answer the phones? No. Well, why not? Well, I have somebody that does that. Well, do you fill out the insurance forms? No. Well, why not? Well, I have somebody that does that. Well, how come you think you need to do everything with the real estate, but you don't think you need to do everything with the
right.
practice? You know, treat the real estate the same way. You hire out pieces of it.
Yeah.
And so you automate things. So, for example, let's take dishwashers. Okay. They're on my mind because I just had to replace mine at my house.
Mm-hmm.
So dishwashers. So I have an appliance company downtown, one company. They get all my business. So I get treated well. So I have a dishwasher all picked out.
Mm-hmm.
So if a tenant calls and says, my dishwasher's broken, then I basically okay it for them to contact directly to the appliance company, and now I'm out of the loop. The appliance company goes there, checks it out. If they can fix it, they fix it. If they can't, they know which one I use, they replace it, and they just send me the bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm totally out of the loop. All I did was say, okay.
Right.
And it's in the loop. So you hire somebody who does the yard maintenance. Now, the very first year we started, we did everything, my wife and I and the kids, because I wanted to know exactly what it took to run the property. After 1 year, we began hiring out pieces. The first piece we hired out was yard maintenance. Someone else took care of that. Then I hired a maintenance man. And we had a maintenance line. And if you needed routine maintenance, you called the maintenance line, you left a message, and every day he would check the messages and he'd go fix whatever needed fixing. You know, and so you automated appliance repairs. You automated carpet repairs and carpet replacement. And, you know, mm-hmm. you get all those things set up. So all my job was to say, okay, go ahead with that. The role I played at the peak of this whole thing was that I showed the unit, I approved the tenant, I signed the contract, I collected the money.
Okay.
And then I oversaw all of the other people who worked for me doing the other pieces.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, like, you have it set up just like a doctor's office in a sense that, you know, in your doctor's office, you're not the one taking the blood pressure. You're not the one making the appointments. So you're able to do the stuff that's really the highest and best use of your time as a landlord, and then you're just outsourcing the rest of it.
Yes.
I think that's great.
The more you automate it, the easier it is to take care of. So I probably spent 10 hours a month running 64 units.
Wow. That's really awesome.
And so it's not hard to do if you just automate things and treat it like the same business you do normally. Everybody who gets into real estate tends to have some other business that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that is, you can look at that business and say, how do we run this one?
Right.
And run your real estate in a similar pattern, and it won't be a burden to be the property manager. You can easily do that. Now, let's fast forward. Now I have a property management company because now I'm retired from medicine. I'm repurposed and I travel a lot. Mm-hmm. Last year we were gone 50% of the time. If I'm gone 50% of the time, I cannot be
right.
the manager here.
Right.
And so when we started to travel a lot, we had to turn that all over to a management company. But now, years later, there's so much cash flow. You know, when I first bought the properties with no money down, there wasn't any cash flow. And mm-hmm. so I couldn't really hire a manager.
Right.
Later on, you know, now I've got lots of cash flow. In fact, my wife commented, she does all the accounting for the properties. She commented, do you realize that our rents are $5,000 higher than when we bought the property, our first one? So over time, you know, rents have gone up.
Right.
So now I can easily afford to have a manager do the parts I was doing as well.
Right.
And so now I don't have to do anything. It's all automated with someone else in charge. And basically, I keep an eye on the property management company.
Now, was it hard to, when you're running everything, you've got systems for everything, you've got things set up in a way that you're comfortable with. When you handed it over to the property manager, I'm sure they've got their own systems and their own way of doing things. Were you at all concerned with the way that they were doing things? Was that an adjustment to hand things off to them?
That was a big problem.
Yeah.
Because they weren't doing it my way.
Right.
And I had a big hang up with that in the beginning, and I needed to learn that there's more than one way to do this. And if I want to have the freedom to travel the world, I've got to let them do it their way.
Right.
So, yeah. For example, some of the things that happened that I wasn't happy with, we painted every room one color, Cielo Blanco. I had one color from one company. Every time so we only bought 1 5-gallon bucket of paint, and when it was gone, we got another one. And we kept. So every time we needed to touch up something, there was one can of paint, and it does everything. The new manager would just call whoever randomly could do the painting, and they would just pick a color. And so suddenly all of my units now had different colors.
Right.
And so that bugged me.
Yeah.
But I had to get used to the fact that they're going to use their system that works well for them.
Right.
And so there was a little bit of a learning curve for me to let go.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Corey hasn't built his rental portfolio all by himself. He's actually had partners over the years. So I want to talk to him about what he's learned about partnerships and hear how some of the partnerships have worked out. We'll get into that here in just a second. But first, I want to thank our sponsor today. It's Rentler. If you're looking to make your life easier as a landlord, Rentler might be exactly what you're looking for. They are the ultimate online resource for landlords. They have everything you could possibly need, like, say, for rental listings. In just a couple of clicks, you can publish your rental listings online. You can take online applications on right there on their website. They can screen tenants for you. They have all the forms you could possibly need as a landlord, from leases for your specific state. They have move-in, move-out checklists. That they have a whole library full of forms. You can also take online payments. And right now, they have a free offer just for our listeners. If you go to tryrentler.com/rental, you can download a report that has the eviction laws for all 50 states. That's tryrentler, tryrentler.com/rental. To download a free report with the eviction laws for all 50 states. All right, Corey, let's get back to the show. So tell me about one of your partnerships.
So, yeah, I was talking to a friend who was about to buy a 9-unit apartment complex. And then he started to get cold feet about the deal. I said, well, but the deal is still pretty good. Why are you getting cold feet? Well, as we talked about it, he was not feeling good about taking the plunge into a big property for the first time. And so I said, well, what if we became partners in the deal? And then I can, you already got this one in escrow. If I just come in with you as a partner, we don't have to change anything, and we'll be buying this in a few weeks, as opposed to you just dropping out and then I buy it and I start all over. So he liked that idea. And then we talked to a few of my family members that I've been trying to get involved in real estate. This would be a good chance for them to get involved without having to jump in with both feet. I would be the controlling manager. They could get involved. They could already see the success I'd had in real estate. And so we kind of formed a partnership, made it an LLC, and began by completing the purchase that my friend had. And we started off in this venture. And our original plan, this was a fixer-upper piece of property. Our original plan was we would fix this up, and in 5 years, we would sell it. And that would teach everybody about how real estate works. And this was in 2007, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
and the market was super hot. We were going to jump in there and all this great stuff was going to happen. Right after we bought the thing, the market crashed. And we did have a bad moment there where our vacancy rate went from around 3% to around 33%.
Wow.
We couldn't buy a tenant.
Yeah.
And so I actually had to put money into, that's when cash flow actually fell below expenses. I had to put some money in for a short period of time. And then 1 month, it was like somebody opened the floodgates. Poof. People started showing up. And within 6 months, everything was full again. Mm-hmm. It was like somebody turned a switch. It was right after tax season. People must have got their tax returns, got some money back, and suddenly everybody was moving back out and getting in apartments again. And so there was an 18-month period where it was bad for a landlord because people were running away from their rentals and doubling up with their friends. And then suddenly at the end of that 18 months, it just blossomed.
Right. So did you
During that 18 months, a bunch of people went bankrupt.
So in that 18-month period, did you have trouble with your partners, like that maybe were a little bit shaky, that maybe wanted to sell, or were they kind of reasonable about the whole thing?
I had trouble with one partner.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The one who was having cold feet at the beginning, and I came and said, well, let's do this together. That partner adamantly wanted to be bought out. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of us bought him out.
Okay.
And he was happy. He went on his way and we owned more of the property. But yeah, one partner. And that was the problem with a partnership. And I'm not real fond of partnerships because of everybody has a different place that they're at in life. Mm-hmm. Everybody has different wants and desires. And that can pose trouble.
Looking back to when you were first entering into this partnership, did everything seem like this is a perfect deal? This is a great opportunity, a great group of people. Like, did you think that things were going to work out a lot better at the onset of the partnership?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a great deal.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem that we had was I had always bought properties that were good and ready to go. This was a fixer-upper. So one of the problems that we had was I kind of underestimated exactly how much money it would take to do the fixing.
Mm, okay.
So there was more cost to the partnership than I thought there should have been. And it was that the fixing had some hidden things that additionally, you know, every time you go to fix something on an older unit, you find two other things.
Right, sure.
So, you know, things cost more than I thought. But all in all, in the beginning, it looked really good. And that was the time when the market was shooting up. It would have been really good if we'd have bought it like 2 years later.
Right,
bottom.
Totally.
And then, wow, would we have done good.
Awesome. Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've definitely learned a lot today. And I think that I know I got a lot of information out of your interview. If somebody wants to reach out to you or learn more about you, read your blog, well, what's the best way for someone to track you down online?
I'm at drcoreysfawcett.com.
Corey has a great blog with some really interesting articles and other great information. If you want to check it out, I've got a link to it on my website. I'll also put links to Corey's social media if you want to connect with him. Just go to rentalincomepodcast.com/episode169. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the show. We've got new interviews every single Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new Caramel Chocolate Cold Brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.